ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Monday with Corbin and Ben. G'day, Ben.
G'day, Corbin. We are jumping from cricket mode to football mode. Today's studio, not quite as picturesque as where I was yesterday with the setting sun behind me, palm trees. It was a fairy floss sky. It was a beautiful setting as I just had a conversation with Daniel Harford. There's a little bit of ambience just in the background as I had that discussion, but how good was that?
Climate's not as good outside, I can tell you that much as well as what we witnessed up in Darwin and what an upset it was there. While that was taking place, there was a whole lot going on in the footy world, and we have our 10 teams for this year's final series. Mark Murphy stopping by as always. It is now time for AFL Monday.
To draw last time out in round eight, now has the ball in his hands. Kicks on its way, and he scores. Oh! It's been kept in play. I'm here, and I do not believe it. The loudest roar you'll hear for a draw as the Blues roller coaster goes for at least another 2 weeks.
Petty drops it in. Van Rooyen on the march, threw a fist in and collects Aaliyah high. And he's landed face down into the turf. Aaliyah immediately has players and teammates come in to assist. That is an ugly connection.
Akers gets it looking for Hayward.
What a mark! He's paid it.
Flew over the top. He was up there for an eternity.
On 774 ABC Melbourne,
ABC Sport Digital,
and ABC Listen.
This is AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben.
It certainly is on the heels of round 23. Just one round to go, and yet the top 10 is set. We're on the run home from here with a pair of draws. We've got our 10 teams. Carlton have got their man, and yet it's another club in the competition which dominates the headlines today in the Sydney Swans. This is AFL Monday on 774 ABC Melbourne. Great to have you with us. Corbin Middlemass alongside Ben Cameron in studio. Not our usual studio, though, it must be said. Ben, here we are on the other side of the Nullarbor. great to be speaking to the good people of Victoria and wherever you're listening right across our great country. We're in WA. Good afternoon to you.
Yeah, great to speak to you, Corbin. We did have a four-hour flight today without Wi-Fi. It was like the old days.
I know.
Don't have too many flights without Wi-Fi anymore. Then we turned our phones on when we landed, and it just broke loose. Our phones were blowing up. So it has been a massive news day. We'll get to all of that, I'm sure, in a moment.
And this man's with us again, the 300-gamer from the Carlton Football Club, the former Carlton captain, the champion of the competition himself, one of our leading analysts here on ABC Sport, Mark Murphy. Hello, Murph.
Yes, great to be with you both, holding the fort down here in Melbourne. So beautiful day here in Melbourne today, actually. It was a foggy start and then beautiful sunshine. So anyway, my best wishes to you over there in the Wild West.
It's pretty wild here today too. We got off the plane. We were lucky enough to spend the week in Darwin, Murph, up there watching Bangladesh beat Australia in an incredible test match. And it was the tropics is really good up there at the moment. I can assure you of that. It's like 30 plus degrees and sunny every day. It's not quite the same over in Perth, as I'm sure it's not in Melbourne today.
It's not so good when you've had a cold, and we both have had a cold. So going from the hot outside air into the cool air conditioning when you're blocked up, not a lot of fun.
AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben, the Carlton champion, Mark Murphy in the house, and the Blues have their man in Josh Fraser. We'll get Murph's thoughts on all of that in just a moment. But the biggest story of the day really centres around the Sydney Swans and the statement from Victoria Police today. Police are investigating a report of a sexual assault in East Melbourne on the 17th of the 8th, which is today, the 17th of August. The incident occurred at a hotel in Wellington Parade in the early hours of the morning. The exact circumstances yet to be established, and the investigation into the incident remains ongoing. Now, the events followed the Swans' 6-goal win over Essendon on Sunday. Now, it was a later game, didn't start until the twilight slot, and still after 4 o'clock. And given the airport curfew in Sydney, which is at 11 p.m. They stayed in Melbourne on Sunday night rather than flying home. Now, the Swans released their own statement earlier today saying that the Sydney Swans can confirm several players were involved in an alleged incident in Melbourne last night. The Swans have notified the AFL and the relevant authorities and cannot provide further comment at this stage. Now, Matthew Pavlich then spoke to the media at 2 p.m. Here's a little of what the Swans chief executive had to say.
We can confirm that several players were involved in an alleged incident last night in Melbourne. We've identified this to the AFL. We are working with them and also the relevant authorities on this matter. We're still piecing together exactly what's transpired here and have our own set of internal inquiries ongoing. But safe to say that we're extremely shocked and disappointed that this has taken place and that the players have found themselves in this situation. We understand the level of interest in the matter and there's going to be lots of speculation, but given it's a police matter right now, that is all that we can say. Well, as I said, it's a police matter ongoing. I'm not going to comment any further on it right now. Appreciate your time, guys. Thank you.
So that was the entire press conference. That's what Matthew Pavlich had to say, the 50-odd seconds of it that you heard there. Tom Morris from Channel 7 and SEN reported earlier today there were three women in the foyer around 7:30 a.m. at the hotel confronting Sydney Swans staff, including Dean Cox at one stage, according to the eyewitness reports. And the Herald Sun is reporting that the club is considering standing down the players involved. Now, the Swans win over Essendon locked in a top two finish, second spot on the table. It means they'll get two home finals, starting with a home qualifying final on Father's Day weekend. Ben, first, I guess, open-ended, first of all, what was your reaction when you heard about the news?
I think shock. As we've spoken about, Corbin, we were on a four-hour flight, no Wi-Fi, so we virtually took off. This story is clearly broken after that point. We've landed and turned our phones off airplane mode, and both our phones have blown up with text messages of, you know, what's happening with the Swans? Can you believe what's happened with the Swans?
Yeah.
We're talking to each other across the aisle saying, what's going on here? We were watching the Matthew Pavlich video clip on X and trying to get across it all. So initially, it was shock. I think for us here, it's going to be difficult because this remains an ongoing police matter. So there's not a heap that we can say beyond what has already been said. We can't comment on it too much. It is understood that four or five players are central to this as the investigation continues. I think there are certain people I've noticed this afternoon who are uncomfortable with how front and centre football is as part of this discussion, I guess.
In the general reporting of it.
In the general reporting of it.
Yep.
But I think a part of it for us on this show is certainly at the moment that we are a football show. And we can't really comment on the police investigation because of the legalities around it. So that will be a little bit of our focus here tonight.
And I understand that, you know, yeah. And it's easy for us to sit here and say, oh, you know, wait for the facts to come out. And I get that there's a large segment of the population that feels like that's not good enough when it comes to very serious charges. And there's multiple reasons for that. And just to reiterate what you said, Ben, I empathise with people that feel that way. And yet at the same time, we are a football program and we will discuss it, obviously, from a football context. That there is precedence for a stand down policy in place, lack of policy, but certainly standing down players, even when it comes to serious allegations. We obviously lived through that with the Tanner Bruin case. So he was stood down by the AFL. He was obviously charged with some very serious charges that were later dropped last November when a key witness admitted to lying as part of those particular charges. The AFL, though, doesn't, somewhat controversially, have a automatic stand down policy. So I guess, again, it raises questions whether that should be in place the same way it is for the NRL. So in the NRL, the National Rugby League, the no-fault stand-down policy requires any player charged with a serious criminal offence carrying a maximum penalty of 11 years or more in prison to be automatically suspended. Just to repeat, the AFL does not have anything like that. And even following the Bruin findings last year, now the AFL came out and basically reiterated that they wouldn't be introducing an automatic stand-down policy. Murph, I guess from a footballing point of view and your experiences, I don't know if you've ever been at a club when serious legal issues have been going on, or at least police intervention and investigation, as it is in this case, takes place. But how would a football club go on a day like this, knowing that there's something taking place off field? What does the football group or the club do overall as a way of communicating such things to a group? How do you imagine today would pan out for, I guess, a player that's not necessarily involved, but obviously this whatever happens here has ramifications for them?
I'd imagine that the leaders of that football club, so CEO and coach, president, captain, are all going to meet on this. And then you'd think that at some point they're going to have to call everyone in together and speak to everyone so everyone's on the same page. But very similar to sort of the public sort of way in which they've gone about it. It's like, well, we can't really comment too much more until the police have wrapped up their investigation. And I suppose as players and people at that that football club, it's about probably trying to keep everything in-house at that point in time and let the powers that be ask all those questions that need to be asked and get all the appropriate answers and then go from there.
I mean, in terms of what it means for their season, So you look at the Sydney Swans, Murph, they're second on the table. This is a team that is on a little bit of a redemptive arc. Yes, they've got a different coach in Dean Cox, but they've made multiple grand finals and lost each of them when you think about, 14, 16, and then getting back there again in 2022, 2024. So their last four grand finals they've lost, and each of them in pretty comprehensive fashion, certainly since 2016 and that close run thing against the Bulldogs. So it's a huge hurdle in their season as well in terms of what it means for the broader group and what they're trying to pursue here. One week out from the final series beginning and all the advantages that they've earned along the way to be the second ranked place team at the end of the home and away season, multiple home finals, and who knows, that they could be without four or five of their best players for a period of September.
Yeah, it's all guesswork, isn't it, at this point in time, about, well, who's going to be missing, if anyone's going to be missing, how many of them are. But they're sitting second on the ladder. It's hard to see them doing anything now in September, really, with what's going to take their eyes off of football, especially in the really short term. Yeah. And then, who knows who's going to be missing for how long a period of time. So yeah, it's hard to see any of those guys who, I'm not sure how many are involved or what it looks like, but it's hard to see really anyone if it's a really serious breach, which obviously the police are involved at this point in time, actually playing football again this season.
If you take four or five of the best 23 out of any team at this stage of the year, regardless of who they are, it certainly hurts your chances in terms of an on-field pursuit and obviously trying to win a premiership. But from a broader perspective, and obviously to keep that in context, is a much bigger deal than a pursuit of a premiership. Just repeating that the news from Victoria Police that police are investigating the report of a sexual assault in East Melbourne. In the early hours of this morning, the incident occurred at a hotel on Wellington Parade in the early hours of the morning. The exact circumstances yet to be established, and the police investigation into the incident remains ongoing. The other big news of the day, Ben, centres around Murph's football club. And this is a sharp segue into certainly matters that involve the competition. And this is a feel-good story in terms of a run under a caretaker coach that we have never seen, to be able to win or really lose only two of his first 13 games in charge on the back of a draw on Sunday. It was enough for the Blues to clinch their place in the final series. What a stunning turnaround.
So this was only reported while we were in the air at 32,000 feet cruising altitude, and we turned on our phones to learn this as well, Corbin. But, Josh Fraser, it was reported by a number of different sources throughout the day that he would be appointed as the Carlton coach, and what we're expecting is a press conference tomorrow from the Carlton Football Club to officially unveil Josh Fraser as the new coach. So 10 wins, one draw, two losses in his time in charge. He's turned them around from 1-8 to begin the season. Mark Murphy, have they made the right decision, the Blues? Are you happy with this?
Oh, very happy. Yeah, I think that for what that club's been through and for where they were when he got his opportunity to sit in the big boy seat and take control of that football club, they've been enormous, haven't they? They had off-field issues around that period as well, so they've been able to get on the front foot with those. He's obviously taken over from a period where they just couldn't close out games. So mentally, a lot of players were low on confidence because they were in most games and then just kept on falling over. So they were almost like a mental, a fragile group, weren't they? Mm. They couldn't close out games. He's turned that around and they've been able to show such maturity. They've changed their style of play. They've been able to get their moments right on numerous occasions in big moments. And we saw that again yesterday when the Bulldogs, to their credit, were fantastic with a few men down. Everyone went into that game thinking that Carlton were just going to get the job done. But, you know, football's not that easy a game, and the Bulldogs really set themselves and fired lots of shots at the Carlton Football Club, and they were able to, in that last minute and a half, put the game to bed and you know, win by getting a draw. So an opportunity of playing finals by getting that draw was smart. The players obviously knew the occasion and knew what was required. So I think Josh Fraser's been enormous, and I think that once he did put his hand up last week and say that he wanted to go through the process, I think this is always going to occur. And now they've solidified that final spot. It's smart now where they will go through the press conference tomorrow and then have all eyes on a finals campaign where they should try and do some damage.
1-300-222-774. That's 1-300-222-774. Is he the right guy, Carlton fans? Are you happy with the appointment? 1-300-222-774, AFL Monday with Corbin Aban and the Carlton champion Mark Murphy in the house.
Even the way they handled the last few minutes, I think that was, you know, another sign of the maturity that they've shown under Josh Fraser, the way they were able to handle that, like Murph alluded to. They all look totally refreshed and brand new. Like Walsh looks quick and like a burst player out of the middle. Cripps has clearly looked rejuvenated since Josh Fraser has come in. So they've been a significantly improved football club. A part of the discussion here, Corbin, has centred around the PR strategy and how this has been handled. So,
which you focused a lot on.
Yeah.
I heard you and Half speak about it yesterday on ABC AFL Daily. So the Blues clearly were worried about the Teague train repeating. They were worried about this gathering too much steam on the way through. And we heard Ollie Florent talk about it in an interview saying, oh, I've been briefed on it so many times. I remember we had Adam Chera on and we asked him the question at one point about whether Josh Fraser's the right guy for the job. And you could sort of hear him in his answer where he thought, hang on, what's the rehearsed line I was meant to roll with? Do you feel like the Blues did a good job at trying to control that narrative on the way through?
Well, I think they had a clear plan that their effort was to try and avoid what Mark Murphy lived through with the hype that came with the Teague train. They were trying to avoid having their hand forced by a public groundswell of emotion.
So this is where I think it's fascinating, Murph. Yeah, a lot of people say, oh, they played it beautifully, and yet everybody called it. It wasn't as if it was this amazing poker hand. Like, everyone knew what they were doing right from the outset. Everybody linked Fraser's name to the job immediately, and particularly when they kept winning. And ultimately, what they got is the same thing they got on David Teague's case. They got the caretaker because he became undeniable. So you can put any kind of process you want in place. But it just became so obvious in the end that whoever presented, and I'm sure there were some other great candidates in, you know, Jamie Graham and Corey Enright and James Kelly and so on and so forth. But when the guy wins 10 and a half games out of his 13, when he took over a 1-8 team, it doesn't really matter what media strategy you want to try and run. The guy's undeniable. There's nothing you can do about that.
I was certainly supported by the fact that they just kept on winning games of football. You're not wrong. But I think they also were attractive as a club to want to go and coach. So I think that those younger coaches who wanted to put their hand up and put their hat in the ring and go through the process, it was a far more attractive job than what Essendon were putting out there. Mm. So when you look at it like that, I think they got the candidates who would have been the best around the league for it. He's obviously being judged on the way in which they've played in, week out. So, I mean, what better process can you get than an opportunity just to have your legs underneath the desk and actually control a team? So, yeah, he's been enormous. I think he should, you know, he's obviously been awarded this role, and so he should be. He's just been fantastic. A breath of fresh air. I think the way in which his humility that has come through has been fantastic. He's always talked about we in terms of a coaching staff and a whole club. Hasn't just always been about him at all, really. So, now the opportunity comes for him to play the best in the league at the moment. They're the other form team of the comp in the past 13 weeks, and they play Fremantle this week, who it'll be interesting to see how they approach it. I mean, they've got nothing to gain, really, at all, whereas Carlton will either go to Adelaide or they'll play against Collingwood next week.
You're right, Corb. Like, once they got to 10-1 and 2, their hands are forced. But they were looking to avoid their hands being forced if it was 7-6 or 8-5.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, it might have been a different scenario. They were trying to manage that in those instances. But you're a prisoner of the numbers once it's 10 out of 13.
100%. Yeah. We'll never know the answer to that, will we?
Well, no.
Because we never were presented with those particular circumstances.
But there probably was a time where there was a bit of pressure when they did lose to Hawthorn and Collingwood in successive weeks. It's like, well, is this the coach for us? But then they've gone and beaten sides who were around them, and obviously they touched up Brisbane, who were, we know how good Brisbane have been over the past few years. So he has shown that under pressure that he was able to galvanise that group to play some good football on the back of two games against Hawthorn and Collingwood, where everyone started to question, well, maybe is he the right man for the job? And I think he's certainly shown that.
So, as you said, Murph, the favoured way is that essentially that they'll play the Crows, the way that it's currently situated. I'm all of a sudden thinking, well, maybe not so fast. What would you rather as a Carlton fan? Would you rather if they get a Fremantle team that perhaps, you know, rest a couple themselves and don't make the last trip over to Melbourne, should they go all out against Fremantle, try and keep the ball rolling, and then move up a spot, you know, hoping that obviously the Melbourne do you a favour and beat the Bulldogs? Is that correct? Yes. Yeah, Melbourne do you a favour and beat the Bulldogs. Then they would essentially avoid the trip to Adelaide. So it would set up the dream scenario for us. It would give us a Carlton-Collingwood final, which obviously would be the promoter's dream and everything else. Is it worth the squeeze, or are you better off, you know, trying to get your injured guys a little fresher, go to Adelaide fully loaded? Like, I guess the choices are either a fully rested team in Adelaide against Adelaide, or a team that's, you know, played the week before but potentially stay in Melbourne and play the Pies.
It's worth the squeeze. You can't flirt with it. You're not going to flirt with your team at this point in time if you're Josh Fraser. So when you look at Collingwood have had the wood over Carlton for quite some time. Adelaide over there at Adelaide Oval, that's a hard place to go and win a game of football. So if you were to ask the players, and they're not going to tell you what they would think, they would say, oh, we don't care who we play, we're happy enough playing finals. But I guarantee you they would prefer to play Collingwood at the MCG rather than go over to Adelaide Oval in that first final.
I've got an awful record against the Pies too in recent time. So they're sort of, it's a bit of a dilemma. They're not, both aren't great options, but they've never beaten the Crows in Adelaide. So they'll have to do something they've never done before, the Blues, if they beat the Crows over there in a wild card game.
Just on the ladder position, so Sydney and Fremantle are both locked in their positions. They can't rise or fall. Brisbane can finish as high as third, which is where they are at the moment, or they can fall as low as sixth. Then you've got teams like Hawthorn, Geelong and Melbourne, who can all finish as high as third or as low as seventh. Adelaide would need a heck of a lot of results to go their way to finish as high as fourth. They would need to win and have Melbourne, Geelong and Hawthorn all lose. Can finish as low as seventh, which is where they are at the moment. And then you've got Collingwood and the Western Bulldogs, who are interchangeable if one wins and the other loses. And Carlton, who can get as high as ninth if they win and the Western Bulldogs lose, but are likely to finish 10th. So those are the machinations of the ladder at the moment.
What made you mad from the weekend of footy?
Well, I often get mad when news is broken about some of our experts that we work with, like Ray Chamberlain making a return to umpiring, and he hasn't told us on the radio, and then we find out about it secondhand.
What?
And
it ends up on some other show somewhere? Or
it ends up on another platform. And Tuesday morning last week.
Tuesday morning.
Yep, I woke up and I had messages galore sent to me from my friends about the story involving our man Mark Murphy making a citizen's arrest in Rome, and like the fact that he had taken down the offending party and been a heroic citizen in the moment. And I thought,
In a headlock.
I thought, this couldn't possibly be true. I spent an hour in the studio with him last night. We spoke a lot about his holiday off air, on air.
Asked him how his holiday was.
Didn't bring this up because he's such a humble man. And yet this is true, is it not, Murph? You made a citizen's arrest.
I did, but look, I was here to talk football, and we all understand that that's what the people want to hear. They didn't want to hear about me over in Europe because you guys continually take it out of me, don't you, when I do anything.
No.
So, I actually didn't think it was going to get out. So it happened 4 weeks prior to me seeing you guys. I was on my first day of my trip back in early July, so I thought I'd got away with it. Obviously, no one really knew much about it. I told a couple of people, which then obviously that spread, and then
it was day
there
one.
There I was.
Day one. So it was reported by Xander Maguire, basically citizens arrest in Rome, an Italian chauffeur who was attacked. It was an innocent party and basically attacked. And then Carlton champion Mark Murphy put the perpetrator in a headlock and waited for police to arrive. How long were you holding this bloke in a headlock for?
Yeah, he was my chauffeur, so that's just driving a van. It obviously just picked up me and the kids and Jesse with all our luggage. So, yep, rolled in straight from Melbourne, straight to Rome, and straight to the hotel where then my driver was gotten a dust up and was punched in the face. So I decided that I'd better help the driver out and just took the bloke down and waited for the police to arrive.
And give me a time frame. How long would that have been?
It was a good, almost 10 minutes that I had to keep him down for. So it was fair to say after about an hour and a half of sleep for 24 hours, it was quite hot. It was 9:30 at night in Rome. So luckily it wasn't in the middle of the day, but it was warm. So I was starting to cramp in the rest of it. But anyway, it all worked out in the end.
I was told people were applauding nearby. Is that true?
Oh, there's a few bystanders basically standing there and watching me do it. So they didn't get involved. But at that point in time, I had the bloke down and he wasn't going anywhere. So that was all right. But it seemed like it probably wasn't 10, but it was at least 5. It seemed like a lifetime waiting for the police to arrive.
Yeah. In all seriousness, good on you, Murph, for doing the right thing and protecting the chauffeur. And not to make light of a very serious situation, but I can't believe your first tackle came in Rome.
You've just jumped on the back of a few other people there that made comments about this.
To you on Tuesday.
Yes, and you make comments about four out of his last six games, you didn't get a tackle. I was subbing five of the last six too, so I couldn't even get on the ground to make a tackle.
He's such a humble man. And this is even, talk about on air and we asked you about your holiday, but off air, nothing else. You would have thought at some stages we're trading messages over the 4 weeks he was away, you'd slip in when someone goes, oh, mate, how's the holiday been? Oh, by the way, was this particular incident.
But Murph does know that if he sent us that text message, everyone would have known within a few days.
Exactly right. Careful who you tell.
Yeah. First thing we'd be doing is telling everyone we know. But we're proud of you, Murph. You're a great citizen, and as proved there, that's helped. Superhero. Yeah. Not all superheroes.
I wouldn't quite go that far. I think everyone would have done the same thing. So my story does get a little bit more far fetched when he was probably the size of Damien Oliver, as I said, that he wasn't the biggest man going around. But I think the more that time goes on, he's probably going to grow into a 6'4" behemoth. But anyway.
1-300-222-774. What made you mad from the weekend of footy? Mark Murphy with us on AFL Monday. My name's Corb Middlemass. Ben Cameron in the house taking your calls. The wild card concept, just before we hit the phones, Michael waiting patiently online. Has the wild card been a success, Murph? Are we ready to judge it now that we've reached the end of the home and away season and essentially we're going into a weekend where we already know our 10 teams?
I think it has been a success. I'm not talking from purely a Carlton perspective, but I think going into the finals period, the bye always disappointed me by the fact that you just didn't have any football on in that bye weekend. So we've got two games next weekend. The AFL couldn't have done it any better. They almost have got it done perfectly in terms of Carlton and Collingwood playing in that first week. But who knows whether or not that'll happen. It's probably looking less likely than not. But I think it's been a success. It's kept it more interesting. There's always going to be some dead rubbers in the last round, but there's still a few games which have, there's still a bit on it. So there's still plenty to like out of this weekend's games.
I just think we've lost a little bit. Look at the last day drama we've had in recent years, Corbin. So last year, do you remember I called the game between Fremantle and the Western Bulldogs? Do you remember how good that was? The winner is through, the loser can go home. We had 2024. The Western Bulldogs needed to beat GWS to clinch. There were three live games on the final day. Fremantle had to beat Port Adelaide in their final game, which they failed to do, because in between, Carlton were defeated by St Kilda by 2 points, and Higgins had that late goal that saw St Kilda get up by 2 points. It made the Fremantle game live. They couldn't win over Port Adelaide. We'll have none of that. And we can go back to 2022. I remember you calling Jamie Elliott kicking the goal for Collingwood against Carlton. He said, it's happened again.
Is that what I said?
It's happened again. And Murph was as flat as a bushman's. Lids was laughing along, and Carlton were out on the final day, because earlier on that day, the Western Bulldogs had won to go into the eight, meaning that if Carlton won, they were back in. If they lost, they were out. And that's what we saw. So we're going to be missing that this weekend. And the other problem is we had the pre-finals bye because Ross Lyon and Brad Scott at Fremantle and North Melbourne, respectively, rested a heap of players in the final round because their positions were secured.
Mm-hmm.
And now we may well see that again. So, because now we have games the next week.
But as you've overlooked, what about all those extra games that have been live for the last however many weeks, where we could have narrowed the field down to a race of nine teams for eight spots? Instead, we've had five out of the eight games every weekend, five out of the nine games, whatever it is, that have had some kind of pending on the top 10. And so you've had more of those live games across the back end of the season, so there's been fewer dead rubbers. And what we get at the end is, in this weekend, for example, just the way the cards have fallen, that there's not as much at stake. But as Murph said, really what it's replacing is nothing. What you're essentially, even if it's a bunch of dead rubber games this weekend, beats what we had in the past, which was essentially no games for one weekend, and then we're straight into knockout finals from next week. And tell you what, those wildcard games, there'll be plenty on those.
It does reintroduce the problem that we introduced the pre-finals bye to solve, though.
But the top six get looked after. They get the week off.
Yep.
So they get looked after for being better for longer in this season. So I think that's the counter argument, and I think the fact that you need to have football. There's no point having a bye leading into the finals. I just hate it without no games. So at least we're going to get two games that are going to be hotly contested.
All right, let's take some calls. 1-300-222-774. Michael, the first of our callers. Hello, Michael.
Good evening. Firstly, Ben, I wanted to say last week you said that you felt that St Kilda supporters had come for you, and I've been one of them. But I know that you, deep down, you've got a heart for them, so I want you to know that.
Thanks, Michael.
And I've gone into pre-season training now for next year. But what I'm ringing up, I'm a salty St Kilda supporter. I'm sitting on the couch yesterday barracking for the Dogs like my life depended on. And I've got Aaron Norton and Waitman and Artie Jones missing shots from 25 metres out straight in front. Like, the game should have been over at halftime. 2.7 they've kicked between them, those three. And I'm sitting there going, that's our season. Anyway, we still had a week to play, but the game could have come out a lot different if Norton had kicked straight. But
What about with about 90 seconds to go when you realise that Carlton weren't going to bother trying to win and just chip it around, which then reduced the chances of the Western Bulldogs being able to win, the result that you needed? How did you go when that realisation just dawned on you?
Exactly, and also the Richards when he just kicked the ball forward, mate. Just get it in there and get a score. Don't worry about it. And he gets done for too far. But good luck to everyone. I'm wearing purple and white during the finals.
Yeah, good on you, Michael.
Good on you, Michael.
Thank you for a great year.
I appreciate your call. And now that Michael's departed, it's a good thing St Kilda didn't make the 10, by the way. And that's not an Andy St Kilda thing. But the Saints are a wild card nightmare for the competition, Murph. They're 0-9 against teams or 0-10 against teams in the top nine. The whole idea of having a wild card team is that you get a team like Carlton. You get a team that's on this magic carpet ride that has caught fire, that can cause some volatility and beat some teams above them. We don't want a team that's proven time and time and time again that they don't measure up against the top nine. The Saints are almost perfectly positioned. They're about 10th or 11th in terms of the competition. They're too good for all the teams below them, but they're not quite good enough for the teams above them. I think they're a bit of a nightmare for the AFL if they were to make it.
Lots of texts coming through. Well, Murph has had plenty of experience on Melbourne trains with Carlton supporters when Voss was coaching. That's from Mick. Then there's another text here saying, Mark Murphy restraining a malefactor in the same mould as his former coach.
Yes.
Voss outside a suburban cafe a couple of years ago. That's from Dave in Darabin. Blues.
Did Vossie ever coach you, Murph?
No, I didn't get Vossie. I finished up and Vossie came in. But he actually chased two offenders down, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
So at least the bloke in front of me was just standing there. So
Didn't have to have the MMA hold on for quite as long, though.
That's right.
Vossie in his case.
I was going to say as well, we know Mick Malthouse and what's happened with him. He did coach Mark Murphy.
He did.
Maybe that something was the, at the Blues.
Maybe that was the former coach they were referring to. Stephen's the next of our callers, 1300 222 774. Hello, Stephen.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Look, what I hated over the weekend were the two draws, obviously. My team's Hawthorn. We didn't need it, but I think it's time to move on. I think it's past its use-by date. We need to go into extra time. Look, every code I know that I follow has extra time. We're the only ones, and we're becoming a joke. I think they've changed the game so much, I don't think it would matter if we added extra time. It's so Americanized as it is.
Oh, like it, Stephen. Appreciate your call. I like the call and the take and the strong opinion. I think I'm actually pro the draw, though, in the home and away season. The traditionalists in me, and I think the 2 points had something sort of quite dramatic. And even like on the weekend, for example, that was as thrilling as any result, wasn't it? The fact that it ended up in a draw and everyone knew what the 2 points meant. And as you said, Carlton were actually milking the clock at the end. Extra time or no extra time, Murph?
No, I'm pro just the draw. Yep. I reckon if you can't win it after... what is it, 120 minutes, then you can't separate them, then bad luck. You don't deserve to win, and you share the points. So I think just keep it the same.
Yeah, some of the numbers around this. So the first time ever that two teams have played two draws in one season, the first time that two teams have played back-to-back matches that have ended as a draw since Brisbane and Port Adelaide did it across 1997 and 1998, only the fourth time in history that that has happened. The last time we had two draws in one round was in 1977,
yeah,
and we had a draw on grand final that year. So are we headed for a draw on grand final day this year as well?
And then a bit of extra time, as we have now with the altered rules, of course, after 2010. Smart thinking from Sam Swadling, who knocked the ball back into the field of play. 29 disposals. He's also this week's Rising Star nominee. So the Pies first for the season. So well done to the young West Australian. And the scorelines in the two draws, so 93-93 and then 92-92. It was eerily similar with obviously Dylan Moore having the last shot. Did he get it right at the end, Murph, Dylan Moore, in the way that he went about it? Should he, in hindsight, have played it differently?
In hindsight, he should have. I thought at the time I was watching it, I thought, knowing, I'll put myself in a similar category to Dylan Moore. I couldn't kick over 45. So if I took a mark anywhere near there, knowing that the game was going to, it was a draw at that point in time, obviously, and taking the opportunity there, I would have just played on straight away and tried to kick it from right next to the man on the mark. That's how I would have gone about it.
I'll try and explain this to you as Ben and I had this conversation the other night. I'm not sure Ben was totally with me.
No, I'm not.
So he's wide out at left half forward, right? And in the end, the kick sort of fades out towards the right, almost like he was aiming, obviously, for the goal face. My point was maybe he should have aimed to the near side behind so he didn't have to kick it as far, sort of at less of a distance, but obviously greater margin for error because if you miss near side, the ball's out of bounds on the fall and the game ends in a draw, which it did in the end anyway.
Well, there's less margin for error because then if you tug it slightly, it's out of bounds on the fall and you still don't score.
Yeah. Which is ultimately what happened. He didn't score anyway. So my theory was it's a shorter kick if you actually aim for the near behinds. What do you reckon?
No, well, you're right. I mean, it is a shorter distance. Yeah, but anyway, I just would have just played on straight away and tried to have a shot from there.
But then he could have been playing on in the siren sounds. He doesn't know exactly how long's left.
But then we'd all say,
why did he play on?
Because he was too far from his distance, so he tried to kick it that was closer in.
1-300-222-774. Corbin and Ben with Mark Murphy. This is AFL Monday on ABC Radio. Marcus in South Melbourne's the next of our callers. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, I'd love to ask a football question here. Something that Murph was a master at, so was David Mundy at Freo. Two matches were lost on the weekend because players no longer touch the ball on the ground, do they? They either run too far or they try and bounce at full speed and can't and lose the ball. I saw that happen in the Freo-Adelaide match a lot. Why don't players touch the ball on the ground anymore?
Oh, good question.
It's a long way down for those guys who are a bit taller to go at full pace to try and touch the ball on the ground. But I don't mind it. I enjoy seeing guys who... touch the ball on the ground. It shows a bit of lack of confidence that they can't bounce the ball properly. But anyway, that's a skill in itself to try and bounce the ball at full pace. It's certainly pretty difficult to do.
Did you touch it on the ground much, Murph?
A few times probably in my 300 games. Not a lot, I don't think. I can't remember David Mundy touching it on the ground too many times. Maybe he did. I'm not too sure. But I was trying to think when that caller was saying that David Mundy and Mark Murphy had something in common. I was trying to work out what it was.
I reckon David Wirrpondo was a bit of one who would touch it on the ground rather than go for the bounce. But maybe I'm getting confused with his sort of one-handed pickups.
I'm here for it. Yeah. I like it, Marcus. Appreciate your call. While we're here, just three cheers for the Dockers too. Yeah. So second minor premiership. And I noticed you recalled the stat yesterday, Ben, on ABC AFL Daily that they matched the Eagles of 91 with 19 wins in a home and away season. So that's the equal best by any WA club in a single season. So to think about all the dominant years the Eagles have had, 19 wins is as good as any West Coast team, and that matched the 1991 side. So 19-3, and when you consider the fact they're 12-0 at home, their three losses are the Giants in Canberra, where they've got a pretty good record, Geelong in Geelong, and the D's at the MCG, where they've rarely lost all season. So they're putting together. It's not a perfect season, but there's not too many imperfections on it.
Yeah. I think if they were to win against Carlton and then run the table in the final, say win at home, win a prelim, win the grand final. To do that out of WA is right up there with what Essendon were able to do in the early 2000s. Yep. I think that's a phenomenal achievement with all of the travel and the tyranny of distance.
What I'm mad about from the weekend of footy?
Yep.
The Dockers, their heritage jumper or their retro jumper that they wore, right?
Yep.
So great idea to wear the green jumper from 1995. The jumper's designed to be worn with the white shorts. It's not meant to be worn with the purple shorts. It looked like some kind of glitch from a video game. Not sure about it at all. If they're going to wear the green jumper, wear it the way it was designed to be worn. So I wasn't so sure about the purple shorts that the Dockers were rolling with the other night.
I thought it was designed to be worn with the green shorts. I've got a photo of 1 metre Peter Bell, first year from the Dockers, wearing that jumper at their launch, and he's running in green shorts with that jumper.
I will go as far as say I'm rock solid. I'm happy to be proven wrong, but they never wore that in an actual game with green shorts. It was only ever worn with the white shorts. Have you got a Mad Monday for us, Murph? Is anything making you mad from footy?
Not quite, but everyone loves that jumper. I think it's an absolute stinker.
Really?
Yeah, all I'm hearing is how good it is, but I like their new iteration of what the Fremantle Dockers have developed. So I would have liked to have seen it. I like it coming out once a year, but that's about it.
1-300-222-774. What made you mad from the weekend of footy? Corbin Middlemouse alongside Ben Cameron and Mark Murphy.
An SMS from Marlon in Fremantle. It says, "My Mad Monday is the fact that yet again the AFL figure heading the internal investigation used to hold a key position at the old club involved. How can Tom Harley possibly lead the AFL's investigation when he isn't even a year out of the CEO role at the Swans?" I don't think Tom Harley will be too close to it. First and foremost, it's a police investigation. Yep. And then 100%. The AFL Integrity Unit, which is headed up by Tony Keane, who was a long-time police detective himself, will run in behind that as well.
Essendon trying to avoid an adverse reaction from their fans, Murph. So we learnt originally that they've done with their interview process, the Essendon Football Club. They've interviewed their four candidates, who well-documented, Jamie Graham, Murray Davis, Mark McVeigh and James Hurd, that they wouldn't announce it in the coming week after those interviews had concluded. And a lot of people sort of thought, doing their own detective work, oh, well, they're playing Sydney. It's Essendon versus Sydney. Mark McVeigh, who is reportedly the favourite. Maybe they didn't want to announce that McVeigh was going to coach. And then, he had to sit in the opposition coach's box. And it's a little bit awkward against the team he's going to lead the following year. And then we learned this week that it looks like it's going to be next week. So they're going to wait until their last home and away game is done against Port Adelaide. And again, people are thinking, well, what's the reason for that? Is it because they're worried what their fans will do if the appointment doesn't go a particular way? What do you think the Bombers are getting at by delaying the announcement of who their full-time senior coach is going to be?
I'm not too sure, and I don't understand it. I mean, they need to try and get that coach in front of the players they're trying to get into that football club. So they're going to be pretty hard to try and get anyone to go there at this point in time. So they need to come out and announce that. I'm not sure why they're sitting on their hands and not wanting to come out and announce their next senior coach. I just don't see a positive in doing so.
Mm. Well, there wouldn't be a positive in doing it now.
No.
There's any positive reason as to why they are delaying this. Yeah. So they know who their next senior coach is going to be. We'll just come out and announce it so he can get to work.
Why do you think they're not announcing it, Gorb?
I don't know. I would also... I'd be fascinated to see, is there more at play here? I don't know for a fact. I haven't been across it in the last week or so, but maybe with Carlton going down their particular path, maybe more candidates have come into it. Who's to say that necessarily it's just those four and they're done with their investigation?
Maybe they're going back to the worry thing.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Are we happy to move on from that?
Yep.
There's a text here from Carolyn in Ballarat. It says, "Hi all, Corbin, you said earlier on in the season you wouldn't tip Fremantle to win the grand final due to their young ages and the statistics of the top of the ladder team losing in the grand final. Any changes now?" It's a great question from you, Carolyn.
Great question.
I love it too.
Yeah.
Put him on the stove.
So there will be a huge statistical outlier. We've had some of the oldest premiership teams of all time in recent years, and the Dockers are one of the youngest, which a lot of people took that as a criticism. Basically, what I'm saying is they are ahead of their time, and what they're doing at such a young age is a huge outlier in the competition. A lot of the other contending teams this year are amongst the six oldest, and I think I said something like it was 18 of the last 19 premiers or something have been top six for age in the competition, and the bottom are the Dockers are bottom six. To answer your question, though, Carolyn, I know that's a big preface. I feel like the Dockers are a lock to make it to grand final day. They haven't lost at home all year. I don't see that changing. So I think they'll win their qualifying final. They'll win their preliminary final. But I think they're a 50-50 shot on grand final day. So I'm going to wait and see who their matchup is. I don't like it if they play Brisbane. I'm not sure I even like it if they play Geelong. Hawthorn, yeah, I feel like have faded as a top contender. I think a really good matchup for them would be Sydney. So I'm sure the events of the day change that a little bit as to how likely the Swans are to make it through. But I need to see who the matchup's going to be on grand final day, because the ground and everything else that's baked into it, they haven't done anything wrong so far, but that's the only bit that worries me a little bit about the Dockers.
Yep. I think all of that's fair. I spoke last night with Half about the fact that still Hawthorn are one win against a top 10 opponent since round five.
Bailey Humphrey, by the way, has extended with the Gold Coast Suns. I don't think anyone saw that happening. So for all the talk about coming back to Victoria, he's signed a new deal through to 2030 with the Gold Coast Suns. Murph, fantastic hit out from you again today. Unfortunately, we're not close enough to be in the same room, but lovely to have your insights. Nevertheless, enjoy the rest of your day. Appreciate you stopping by.
Well, good. Great to chat, boys.
See you, Hulk Hogan.
Mark Murphy, the not all superheroes wear capes. Mark Murphy, our man here. So that was AFL Monday. Don't forget you can join me tomorrow alongside Bob Murphy as we pull apart all the hot button issues from the footy shows. Just another shout out to, was it Aiden who shouted out yesterday? That was a tremendous sort of, what a way to recommend a podcast to your friends. He sent you a video recommending it to multiple mates. So straight onto the Wall of Fame for Aiden when we're back in town.
I want more like that.
Yep.
Keep doing it. You can make your way onto the Wall of Fame. We are growing and the graph is trending up and to the right, which we love to see. So be a friend, tell a friend.
A home of your footy conversation right here on ABC AFL Daily.